Welcome to the first Pico cast. I'm here with Gian DeLeon, who is a well-known blogger, writer, and trend forecaster as far as streetwear and menswear is concerned. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit more about you and, you know, where you're from and what you've been up to and how did you get here?
Sure. Currently, I'm the senior menswear editor at WGSN, and I have an editor-at-large role in a capacity at High Snobiety. But I sort of stemmed from the era of menswear blogging around 2009, 2010, when it was still this sort of very fledgling community of guys who primarily were just graduating college around that time, and also some guys who were just getting into clothing from an enthusiast standpoint. A lot of the people in that world, of course, are Lawrence Schlossman, Michael Williams of A Continuous Lean, Corey Ohlendorf of LA, where I was the shopping editor. That was sort of my first entry into the menswear blogosphere, so to speak. But at the time, you know, it was very much about learning the classics, tailoring, why you should own a good suit, why you should even own a tuxedo. You know, a lot of at that time, a lot of guys didn't really know the finer points of evening dressing. And so at that time, a lot of this information was more readily available on online forums. You know, for the classic menswear, there was Ask Andy About Clothes and Style Forum. And for the more directional and street stuff, there was Super Future, Hypebeast, and sneakers, of course, there was Nike Talk. But there was sort of a learning curve for these forums, as well as an ingratiation period, as with any online community. And so it wasn't really as easy for the average guy to go into a forum and ask a question or sort of learn the basics without having to do a lot of digging and sort of withstand a lot of well-intentioned ribbing from the community. But at the same time, you know, that turns a lot of guys off. And so I think that's why the blogging platform really spoke to a lot of men who just wanted to look good in their clothes. Didn't necessarily have a vested interest in the fashion world. They just wanted to know, okay, like, what should I buy to have a wear-to-work wardrobe and also a solid off-duty wardrobe?
So this was how long ago? 5 years? 6 years?
Almost 7 or 8 years for me. You know, when I was working for Valet, I was living in Washington, D.C. at the time, and my day job, I was actually a defense contractor for the Department of Defense. I worked for a contractor that primarily specialized in social media, and so my job was essentially blogging for a lot of public-facing content and running social media platforms for certain arms of the DoD.
Wow, that's a pretty, you know, you've come a long way from there, from DoD to talking about design and clothing and shoes and stuff. I think, were you always interested in that kind of stuff when you were younger, or is it something, you know, which came to you after you graduated from school, I mean college, and then went to work and that kind of?
I mean, I've always sort of been interested in clothing. In sixth grade, I remember stealing my dad's Polo Ralph Lauren pocket tees and golf jackets. Well, not stealing. I was definitely borrowing them. You know, he would get them back. But that was the first time I really had an affinity for a brand in terms of clothing. And probably around high school, you know, as one does, you sort of get into different types of subcultures. Like for me, I started listening to a lot of rap and a lot of older rock and punk, like The Clash, The Smiths, and also some emo music, I'm not gonna lie. So my music tastes have always been pretty diverse, and what really drew me into clothing was how people who listen to certain types of music define themselves by how they dress. You know, not just band tees, but also, you know, in 2005, 2003, I was wearing a lot of so-called urban brands. I didn't wear FUBU. I had Johnny Blaze, which was Method Man's brand, Triple Five Soul. And at the same time, I, you know, wore band t-shirts and had really long hair and really, well, at the time, you know, skinny jeans for men didn't exist. So for a time, I did wear women's jeans because of the fit. So that really was my first taste of how clothing and culture are intertwined. And I just started getting into more of the clothing aspect. Once I started learning about the elements of classic menswear, whether it was from forums or from books that I was looking at and reading in magazines as well.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Which part of America? Your heritage and your schooling?
I was born in the Philippines. I moved to America when I was about 4 or 5. We lived in Virginia Beach before moving to Northern Virginia. And so I lived in Washington, D.C. for a while. And my first job out of college, I was editing for a PR company. My first job out of college, I was editing for a PR newswire. And then after that, I was a defense contractor doing social media for certain branches of the Department of Defense.
Wow. And so how did you get into fashion and you know, streetwear from there?
Well, when I was working at the DOD, I started to develop an interest in classic menswear. I had to really figure out what I was going to wear to work. But before that, in high school and in college, I developed an acute sense for how subculture and the music that you listen to can somehow reflect what you wear, because music and subculture have and style have always been intertwined as, you know, people of different musical tastes and tribes define themselves and find each other a lot of times by what they wear.
Right. Do you think fashion influences culture or culture influences fashion?
I think culture influences fashion. You know, I always like to say that fashion at its best on the aspirational level is indicative of a society's values. And if you look at the way that alternative fashion has developed, it's by defying social norms or recontextualizing certain pieces and motifs in a high society to reflect a lower class, like tartan plaid with punk, or, you know, Stussy and what he was doing with the reversed S's, which was calling after Chanel's interlocked C's.
So is Slimane did a good job of kind of capturing that both at the high level and at the street level? That's why he was so successful?
I think what Slimane's strength is drawing from the fact that people want to define themselves not just by their music, but now by the labels that they wear, and by infusing Saint Laurent with a very accessible rock and roll aesthetic. You know, I mean, that has been a trope that has really never gone away from men's fashion in particular. You know, what guy doesn't want to look a little rebellious? And he's honed it in by building a universe that revolves around that specific look, and also that's really skinny fit.
Right, but it seems like, you know, we are going back to the idea of culture influencing fashion now. I think the fashion as you know it is beginning to lose its relevance. At least, like, even as an older person, I am almost 50, and I can tell you, I just can't relate to what I see in the fashion magazines or wherever. I just feel that there is no, like, sense of reality in fashion today, and they're always trailing in terms of, like, you know, where society actually is. Like, they seem to say that, like, we will make the products faster and bring it to the customer faster, but in reality, that's the wrong thing to focus on. I see that the cultural disconnect is pretty extreme. I don't know what you think about that.
I mean, you know, in terms of high fashion and the world of ateliers like Balenciaga and things like that, it's always been a world of aspiration. It's, you know, even Visvim, which is sort of an alternative and cult label, even though they're fast becoming more popular, it markets itself in the currency of universe building. you know, and there's a price of admission for each respective universe. Not every guy is going to buy a, you know, $10,000 cochineal poncho, but it's consistent with Hiroki Nakamura's other offerings. And I think there's definitely a disconnect as men in particular try to understand the difference between fashion and style. Style is how you dress and why you wear what you wear, and fashion is essentially what the paradigm is for what a person is wearing and why it's relevant for the time and why it reflects things that are going on in the conversation.
Right, so let's talk about what's going on in the conversation. What does your soothsayer capabilities tell us about, you know, style and fashion right now, what we should be thinking about today and in looking into the near future?
I mean, what I always like to say is, you know, we're in the choose-your-own-adventure era of menswear now. In the, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, in the fledgling era of menswear blogging, you had sites like Valet, Continuous Lean, Sartorially Inclined, really just espousing classics. It was classics, classics, classics. Here's what you need to know if you just want to look good in your clothes. And there's always going to be more guys that just want to look good in their clothes rather than aspire to a certain aesthetic, you know? But as that consumer evolved, you know, it's like if you're classically trained as a musician, you can understand jazz better because you can see and really develop a good ear for the nuances that are being either sidestepped or completely broken by these musicians. And it's the same with clothes. If you have an idea for how something fits or how something should fit, then you are in a better place to sort of play with the notions of those things and define that for yourself.
Today, what are things which are interesting to you as of now?
I mean, for me, it's, you know,
like from a clothing and, you know, accessory standpoint, like what is it that, you know, guys want to be looking into the future and say we should be paying attention to?
I think the directional stuff is going to really be implemented in the everyday wardrobe in a way that, you know, doesn't look like it's a fashion editorial. I think the main difference between a lot of how menswear is and how womenswear is that womenswear is based on getting the look and looking head to toe in a certain collection, and menswear has always been very piece-based. You know, whether it's like an undercover leather jacket with Psycho Candy printed on the back or a Craig Green workwear shirt with fringe straps and things hanging off of it. You know, guys generally don't get the whole look. They get one piece and wear it with a pair of APC jeans and like a Common Projects Achilles sneaker that they already own. And that's really part of what is driving the modern menswear consumer now is sort of this applicable type of fashion. And the idea that, yes, you know what, I could probably pull this off. It's almost a dare to see somebody in, or to see a Rick Owens piece, and it's be like, what guy would wear this? And then you walk outside in Soho and you actually see several guys wearing it, and each of them is wearing it in his own different way. And he probably hangs out with people who dress alike. And that goes for everything from like a Craig Green to Onda Mulmeister to Dries Van Noten. It's like, you know, when I say style tribes, it's guys that dress in a specific way and tend to congregate with other guys who can appreciate the same things.
Okay. Let's talk about five of your favorite brands which are accessible and you think will be really hot in next couple of years.
I mean, some of my favorite brands right now, I've always had an appreciation for Dries Van Noten. He, you know, is one of the Antwerp Six, the influential Belgian designers. He does a lot of really cerebral prints. You know, I've been wearing a coat. It's like a long floral purple coat, which I've been wearing more ever since I heard the news of Prince. I really like how he does pattern. And he even does really good suits as well. And these really nice elevated track pants that I probably wear all the time. On the more sportswear and athletic level, or I hate the word athleisure, but
on the elevated sportswear level, you know, John Elliott has been consistently doing better things each season with fabrication, and at the retail level, he has been a strong seller for even traditional retailers like Bergdorf Goodman, as well as his own vertical on his e-commerce site. One of the brands that I really like right now is Kavemt, which is a Japanese label by Toby Feltwell and this designer Skate Thing, who previously worked with Pharrell on the Billionaire Boys Club line. But it's sort of a heavily graphic-oriented line, but I like that a lot of the references stem from fringe digital culture. So whether it's Philip K. Dick to hackers like Ian Softly's film and sort of Mr. Robot, that's sort of the universe that they draw from their graphics. And, you know, yes, they make a lot of graphic tees and hoodies, but they also have, you know, these cool socks with a recycling bin icon on them. And I just kind of dig that as a digital native. And then trying to think who else. That's three?
Yeah.
Noah, I really like as well. You know, Brenda Babinzin has been doing his thing now for almost a year. And it's a resurrected line that draws a lot from nautical staples so far. But he was the former creative director of Supreme and just opened his store in Mulberry. And it gets compared a lot to, like, dad style. You know, light wash jeans, flannel shirts, just this very approachable mode of dressing. But if you understand the references and really get a feel for the clothing and go to the store itself, it's more about, you know, having a sense of community. It's the kind of store you can go into and talk with the store, the sales associates, and just talk about anything from clothes to the environment to, you know, things that are happening in New York. And then you really get a feel for the culture he's trying to create. Like recently he did a collaboration with George Cox, the famed shoemaker that made Creepers. It's essentially a really thick crepe-soled blue shirt shoe, and it comes in nice pastel suedes. There's like a dusty pink, a nice baby blue, and I think a couple other colors, but those are the two that stand out to me. And then probably Engineered Garments still is, you know, probably one of my favorite menswear labels. Like, yeah. I can't see myself ever getting tired of them. You know, what Daiki Suzuki and Angelo Rucci are doing. You know, that was literally the first designer label I was into in my adult life, probably around 2007, 2008. And, you know, it's so easy to classify it as workwear, but that's very disingenuous to what they do, because a lot of the references come from Comme des Garçons. You know, there's a lot of directional pieces that are in there, but it might just look like a blazer. But to me, it epitomizes what makes a good menswear brand, wherein it's familiar, but it pushes the envelope enough that you can appreciate the differences.
They're pretty popular in the West Coast. Union Made carries them and mm-hmm. a bunch of others. So does Dries Van Noten is also pretty popular in the Bay Area. I know that for... I've seen, like, a lot of people wear it in suits in particular. Not that many people wear suits, mm-hmm. but the blazers and all. Not for my body type. I still tend to wear my jackets, which were made for my torso more than anything mm-hmm. else. Okay, let's talk about the most important thing in the whole wide world, which is shoes and why we are seeing a sneaker revival. You're a bit of an expert on sneakers. And I have, my new obsession is sneakers. I've been a traditional shoe guy. Like, I'm not traditional in a sense that I will wear purple leather shoes. So, mm-hmm. but I'm more traditional in design, and I like dress shoes more than anything else. But I recently been fascinated by sneakers, and, you know, and probably too late to the party, but I want to know more about that. Like, tell me a little bit about why are we seeing this, interest in sneakers right now in our culture?
I think what it boils down to mainly is the casualization of the workplace. You know, a guy's wear-to-work wardrobe is drastically different from what it was 5 years ago. You know, the suit Guy Trebe of the New York Times just wrote about the waning fortunes of the suit. And because of that, you know, Guy, it's now more, it's now commonly acceptable to see a man go to work in probably a pair of slim chinos and Stan Smith's at the crew neck sweater than a full suit. You know, and because of that, I think sneakers have been accepted as, you know, a welcome alternative to the dress shoe, because first off, they're more comfortable. Yes, there are lighter weight dress shoes, but sneakers are sneakers, and they look cool. There are cool-looking dress shoes, yes, but, you know, from a consumer standpoint, it's like if you're wanting to wear something that sort of catches the attention of, like, other people, you know, because guys are just starting to dress for other guys now, you know, they can tell a pair of common projects from the gold numbers. You can't necessarily tell the provenance of a lot of proper men's dress shoes. And they're relatively affordable, depending on who you buy them from. And unlike dress shoes, sneaker culture has always embraced having multiple pairs. You know, Nelly songs, Air Force Ones, it's like, get me two pairs, I need two pairs. And it's based on amassing and collecting as many as you can. And I think that also appeals to a lot of guys who like that collection aspect. You know, it's like almost like baseball cards at this point, even when you look at the resale market, where certain Jordans or Kanye West shoes can fetch a hefty price on eBay and e-commerce sites like Grailed. And, you know, the fact that there's even a retail industry now at stores of Stadium Goods and Flight Club is indicative of the size of that market.
Just to be clear, I can tell who's wearing what leather dress shoes.
Yeah.
I have a sickness.
I mean, of course, you can tell like an Alden from a mile away, or Doc Martens, or a Tom Brown because of the crow grain strap on the back.
I can tell Graziano from Bontoni from St. Crispin's, no problem. I mean, like, that's probably the thing I notice a lot. Like, but I just see men wear really bad square toe.
Right.
$99 shoes, which is just like gets my, you know, hair up, like, and I get so upset when I see that.
Yeah,
I think from that standpoint, you know, sneakers are way better.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, what are your favorite sneakers right now? In terms of brands, not just favorite pair.
I mean, Common Projects, definitely. You know, they created that luxury sneaker market. Vans, I have always been a huge fan of. Engineered Garments actually just released several collaborative versions, and today I'm wearing a pair of their slip-ons. It's sort of has a wabi-sabi appeal where they alternate smooth leather and rough out suede on the other side. And then I've also been wearing a lot of Adidas lately. The Stan Smith in particular, the collaborative version with Raf Simons that come in this nice eraser pink that I got because they reminded me of the pink pearl erasers I used in high school. And I have a pair of Hender schemes. Of course, everybody will talk about the Jordans. Like, essentially, it's a Japanese company that makes leather versions of sneakers with, like, a leather sole. They're super expensive. I'm not going to lie, I got my pair off Rakuten. It's a pre-worn pair that I got resold with a crepe sole on the bottom. And it's styled after the Vans era. So it looks like this beautifully aged plimsoll with this really thin crepe sole on the bottom, and the crepe sole actually made them a lot more comfortable. Some people might think it's cheating. I think it's me saving money and not paying $400 or, you know, $500 for a brand new pair that I have to break in myself. And who else? I mean, I still wear a lot of Nikes. You know, Nike is Nike. At the end of the day, they are the most recognizable brand on the planet. And in terms of sneakers, you know, people might be talking about Adidas gaining market share. But, I mean, I'm never going to get rid of a lot of my classic retro Jordans. Like, the first shoe I ever remember wanting really, really bad was the Black and Royal Jordan 1. And when I finally got them, it was, you know, it was like a dragon had been slayed.
So you have, what, 100 pairs, 200 pairs?
I'd estimate maybe 175 to 200 at this point. Yeah.
So, like, that's more space than your bed, right?
Yes.
Wow. So that's like the prerequisite for you when you're looking for a new apartment to live in, that there should be ample shoe space?
No, the shoe space thing, it's just I probably have to figure it out. You know, it's like a interesting shelving situation, having to hide things under other things, like under the bed or stacking them in a closet with a shoe rack. You know, if you have a lot of shoes, you'll be creative in how you store them. One of my buddies, this writer, Pete Forrester, actually, was just featured on Rachel Ray's show, where they remade his apartment to help show off his sneakers, and he used to have a lot of boxes. And I think that's the main thing. Like, you know, sneakerheads love to keep boxes. I don't. I just save space when you don't have to worry about that clutter. You know, unless you're going to plan to resell them, which I don't really do that. I mean, if I resell worn pairs on a site like Grailed, you know, it's to make space and to fund probably another sneaker purchase. But, you know, unless you plan on keeping them in the box, there's no reason for me to keep the box.
Okay. Last question before we go. You, and just mentioned before and during our conversation about, you know, digital inspiring some, you know, new streetwear looks. And I've always said, you know, I think it was Bill Cunningham who said that the lineup for the Apple Watch and the phone, that's the fashion, not, you know, they don't line up for Chanel or you know, like any of the big brands. Mm-hmm. They line up for Supreme. They don't line up for any of the you know, high-end brands. What I'm wondering is that is digital starting to influence how people dress as well? You know, we've always had people mock the Mark Zuckerberg look, mm-hmm. but it seems like the digital is having a larger cultural impact on how people are beginning to dress and think about workplace and, you know, how society lives. I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Absolutely. Last year, actually, 2015, Euromonitor International reported that for the first time, clothing overtook tech as the highest thing people spent money on online. So digital absolutely has an effect on clothing and how we access it. Because, I mean, I buy from Mr. Porter, and I do the same-day shipping service. So it's about instant gratification, and it's about not having to wait in line and not having to try on things. You know, a lot of male consumers tend to know their measurements if they're buying a lot of fashion stuff. You know, I mean, if you've been buying clothes as long as you and I have, we tend to not need to try things on as much if we have the precise measurements or are familiar with the brands. You know, if you've been wearing a brand long enough, you'll know that a large will fit or a size 32 pant will fit. And it's about the convenience of it. And if it doesn't work out, you can send it back. You know, guys generally hate shopping. And, you know, especially in a city like New York where you can have a car or your dinner waiting for you at your door when you get home, online shopping just helps make that easier.
Right. But what about the looks which are coming because of the, like, you know, it's like, hey, the Mark Zuckerberg look, which mm-hmm. is like essentially a uniform. And, you know, the hoodies were popularized by Silicon Valley in a sense that everybody's just wearing those and jeans. And so then you start to see the whole leisure wear mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of casual workspace. And I think at least I feel that a lot of these trends actually started emanating out of the Silicon Valley versus the other way around, all these things coming into Silicon Valley from the outside.
I mean, definitely, you know, because there are a lot of digital natives now and a lot of them are consumers, you see a new kind of nostalgia influencing clothes. There was a skate brand called Bronze 56K, which is obviously a reference to the modem, and they sell them at Dover Street Market. But one of their recurring graphics is a Windows graphic. It's a logo flip of the Windows logo. And Patrick Irvell's fall winter collection upcoming for 2016 essentially is an elevated version of a 1995-1990s tech look, to the point where he has lanyards and he created a fake software company. And he features those logos on sweaters. And also, you know, Jeremy Scott, when he showed a collection a couple years ago, it looked like a GeoCities page on a dress. You know, have pop-up ads, things like that. There's definitely a burgeoning influence of it. I mean, if you also look at April Fool's Day, you know, there was the joke of Mark Zuckerberg for H&M that was something like 7 gray t-shirts and 1 pair of washed jeans. I think the main influence that tech has had on fashion is it's made everyone more rational. We live in the age of the rational purchase and not about emotional purchases. When people buy something, it's not about how it makes them feel. It's about what they're getting for their money. And that's absolutely because of tech, and that's absolutely because of the advent of things like Instagram and Seamless and things like that. You know, people want to know what they're paying for. And, you know, fashion for the longest time has marketed in the currency of emotion and make people feel things. And we're learning not to really feel things as much because we want to be able to feel like we have value when we buy something now.
Well, thank you so much for making time, and look forward to your new future writings. Thanks.
Thank you.